What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday, my main man, Jake Sheehy.
Yes, sir.
How are we doing, buddy?
Man, blessed. So happy to be here. A lot of good stuff.
Awesome.
Feeling great.
Awesome. We're gonna dive in. Those of you that are new to our podcast, we go through two episodes every single week. On Wednesdays, we do what we call Whiskey Wednesday, where Jake pulls up some trending topics in the headlines, and we apply it, and what's kind of applicable to our short-term rental investing journey. Mm-hmm. We're looking at all kinds of different things, and so that's what we're going to be talking about today. On Fridays, we bring in short-term rental investors for our Experts Corner interviews, where mm-hmm. they share the good, the bad, the ugly. So those of you that are regular listeners, a little favor to you. We have like 58%, mm-hmm. 57% of our members that are regular listeners that don't subscribe. So if you're a regular listener, let's get that subscribe button, follow. Those things help us. And so if you are brand new and you do enjoy this conversation and you want to hear more like it, hit that subscribe button as well. We'd love to have you as well.
Yes.
Shout out to Graham and Dave and Matt that they fully launched New River Ridge. Mm-hmm. We had them on our podcast on Experts Corner a couple weeks ago. And man, they've had a great launch. They've got the five little cabins there in Western North Carolina mountains. Mm. Really fun little micro resort that's doing great. So shout out to you guys. Super stoked to see that hit the ground running and that launch going as successful as it is. So little shout out there.
I'll put the link in the description if you want to check it
out. Yeah, let's do that. Let's make sure that we link that so they can go check them out. Great launch. Was looking at the Airbnb listings from last week, and we always say, guys, success leaves clues. Come on. So we post these links for a reason. Go check them out, right? Go in there and check them out. So, so Jake,
how was your
Easter, brother?
Man, it's amazing.
Without
Easter, it's all useless, man.
Right?
Without Easter, whole thing is useless. Yeah. So it's a blessing. We got to it's a good remembrance, man. And you turn on Passion of the Christ or something, you see that, and you're all, dang, dude, it's heavy. But it's a great day.
Yeah.
It felt amazing.
Yeah.
I went out and mowed my lawn. Gah, blessed.
Right.
Feeling amazing.
It was great.
Good weather.
The smell,
we had
great weather.
I loved it.
Yeah.
You?
Yeah. We had a great weekend. It was fun. Yeah. I was watching and checking out like how many people watch Passion, the movie and it's man, it's a Teresa has a hard time watching that one. She's just looking away the whole time. It's pretty tough. You know, it's always interesting when people say follow their passion, and we think of good stuff, and we think and really passion came from the Passion of the Christ, right? And Jesus's journey, and that road and to crucifixion, right? The hard journey, and it's it was brutal, and it's it's funny that we equate that to something that we really enjoy and we really love, and obviously it came to the atonement and everlasting life and the resurrection and everything else. But it's what a sacrifice.
It's tough.
It's a good reminder though.
Yeah.
Good weekend and good reminder and so
now we're kicking off Monday strong, man. Kicking off Monday getting after it. Tons of great stuff
Let's
here.
Let's go. So what do we have on the agenda?
All right, we have two questions. We'll go over that. Then we have three topics. The first topic is tourism tax, about how Airbnbs have bettered the country. We can kind of talk about that. Then we're going to go into travel change. We've seen some really interesting change on how, I guess, spring and summer bookings are looking and why they're doing this. And then we're going to end it with the possibility that maybe could Airbnb be dying? Is this the slow death of Airbnb?
Okay, now you got me really interested to see what we're pulling up there.
Keep that hook in it, right?
All right.
So we have to talk about these three things. We have these two questions. Let's go over them real fast. Here we go. First, support@vodacy.com. If you have a question, send it in. We'll put it on the episode. Here we go. Kim's question. Now, this is kind of a wild one. Here we go. We had a guest smoke pot in our place. Really good hook right there.
Just gets you, right?
I don't have it on camera, but my cleaner says the smell is terrible. How do I document a smell? She's taking pictures of bedding where the dust from the rolling joints. Is this an air cover instance? I hate to use that, but it will cost a ton to fix this. They violated Airbnb policy that clearly says no smoking. Please help.
Yeah, that's a tough one, Kim, because you're exactly right. You can't document smell. It is very difficult to be able to document a smell. And air cover, Airbnb, they are always going to, and they will stand behind you. It can be a little bit more of a pain in the butt, whether you run down that road or not. But it is, it can be cleaned up. You know, the ozone, you can get an ozone machine in there and they can get help with that smell. And a lot of times get it out of the, you know, you get it out of the furnitures and the, you know, the linens and stuff. Yeah. So you can get the smell out. It is a process. You want to do it correctly because you don't want your future guests to be walking into that.
Yeah.
But you do want sometimes people held accountable when they break the rules. And look for, you know, you got to look for the remnants of the, you know, the in the butt ends of the cigarettes, their butt ends of the joints, any, what, you know, the, you know, I don't know if the ash is going to show up very well on photos, but if you can document it and you can show it to Airbnb, they're going to want you to go to the guest first. Air cover is not always, you know, we always have to remember who's customer Airbnb, who's really Airbnb's customer. It's not us as the host, we're vendors. The customer is the guest. And so they're always going to side and kind of give the benefit of the doubt to the guest. So it's on us to, the burden of proof lies on us. And so, when it has to do with smoke or a smell, it's difficult to document that. There are other avenues as well. If you had any of that, you know, kind of the third party damage waiver type of insurance, like Wavo and stuff, some of those things that are available to us as investors, sometimes that's an easier route to go in and take care of. But, you know, at the very least, you do want to get the ozone machine in there. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in there for a couple of days. Hopefully, you can do it in between your next guest, get that cleaned up. But it's a difficult, you know, anytime you're cleaning up after a guest and trying to make an insurance claim. If there was any other damage, and you could combine it with that claim and get that, get the cleanup and the mitigation paid for, that'd be great. Air cover is going to be... we've had plenty of our members who have gone down that road and collected from air cover. And then obviously when they collected, you're, you know, protected on a bad review because it can be deemed as retaliation, if you will, and Airbnb will remove that. So I'm not saying they won't work with you. It's just the burden of proof lies on you and you want to leave any questions or any doubt. If there is any doubt or any questions, I guess I should say it this way, is your likelihood of getting coverage from air cover and getting that support from Airbnb is going to be, it's going to go down the more doubt there is.
Yeah. Two questions. Yeah. If you do report it, would that hurt you kind of in long term? Would Airbnb go, uh-oh, here we go?
It shouldn't, right?
Okay.
Technically, no, it shouldn't. We always wonder because like we always say, hey, listen, they're, you know, Airbnb doesn't want problem children, right? They don't want customer service issues. They don't want to deal with this stuff. But they, you know, they say they don't punish us if somebody breaks the rules, that they're there to help, you know, uphold and make sure that those rules are enforced. And so they say that that doesn't punish us. We always wonder as hosts because we feel like it does a little bit. And so it's always in the back of our mind that we feel like it does. Nothing real definitive that we can say, yeah, we know that the algorithm doesn't like that, because they say, no, we're here to help you enforce those rules.
Yeah. I'm going to put you in a corner now. Okay. They have this person, your cleaner goes in, lets you know it smells in here, but you have a booking maybe the next day. Would you cancel that upcoming booking? Would you talk to them? How would you handle that if you get this?
Yeah. Communication, always like over communicate, like say, hey, listen, we walked in here. The place smells like smoke. You know, the place is not, you know, we're going to try to get the smell out of there. We know you're coming in tomorrow, you know, especially if it's a smoke smell,
right?
Those ozone machines are usually in there for 1 or 2 days. So they have to be in there kind of to mitigate that problem for more than just, you know, a couple hours. And so over communicate to the guests, let them know what the problem is, let them know what you're trying to do to remedy it, and almost leave it up to them of what they want and how they want to handle it. Because you don't want to ruin their vacation either, but sometimes there's not a lot we can do about it. We've got to mitigate the problem first.
Okay. Next question here, support@vodacy.com. Anthony, what is the current Vodacy recommended super smart door lock?
So we use the Schlage Encode, and I don't think I pronounced that right. I think it is actually Schlage, if I am pronouncing it correctly. But that seems to be the kind of the preferred one that a lot of short-term rental operators use, management companies use. It's great. It's Wi-Fi enabled. You can set custom codes for your guests during specific times. You can specific check-in, check-out times that their lock is going to work. Very easy to use. You can see whether it's unlocked or locked, when they access it, all those different things. You can unlock it remotely if they're having a problem. And so lots of different options with that door lock. And so that's the one we use, and it's the one we recommend. And it seems to be the number one recommended kind of across the board in the short-term rental world.
Love it. All right, let's go in. We got our three topics now. We're about exactly at 10 minutes. Let's do this thing. The first one, tourism tax. All right, so we see this article that just came out April 6th today from Airbnb. Hosts and guests generated $17.3 billion in tourism taxes for communities around the world. Hosts and guests in the U.S. have generated $13.5 billion in tourism taxes to governments across the country, including $2.7 billion in tourism taxes collected and remitted in 2025 alone. Really interesting, because it seems like this STRs are known for like helping the community, right? But it seems like, why we have so much pushback on regulation? Like, why would you take all these billions in taxes but then still want to have regulation? That seems like two backwards thoughts, right?
Yeah. So one, when we started really paying the hospitality tax, the big argument was the people that were pushing back against STRs was the hotel industry, saying, hey, listen, you know, we have to pay these hospitality taxes. We have to charge these hospitality taxes to our guests. And all these short-term rental hosts are popping up and they're not having to pay. So Airbnb was a big, you know, they actually pushed this forward very well with working with a lot of municipalities and with a lot of different groups, and saying, hey, listen, we will help collect these taxes. We'll start, like, let's, if that's the argument against short-term rentals, charge the tax, charge the hospitality tax. We agree, right? There are guests coming in, they're using the resources, they're using the infrastructure of these areas, you know, and their wear and tear on some of the, you know, the municipalities and whatever you have in that area. And so let's charge a tax that pays for that, right? And so there's different levels of regulation. One, the tax is there too, because they're like, think about like any of your major like short-term rental destinations. We have these peak seasons, right? And so if there's a peak season at the beach in Destin, for example, and all of a sudden the summertime, the population grows from, you know, the regular local residents to, you know, sometimes five or six times the amount of people using the streets and the resources and the infrastructure. So they have to have the money to go hire more cops, hire, you know, invest in different, you know, different, all those different resources that everybody's going to be using, those public resources and the infrastructure that is there. And so they have to go, there's more wear and tear on the stuff that's just, you know, roads, you know, it's more wear and tear. They got to repair more stuff, but they also need people, right? We need more cops. We need more regulators. We need people out there saying, hey, listen, you know, if something goes wrong, we've got to have some cops and some law enforcement out here, you know, patrolling. We need more lifeguards, whatever it is, right? So those taxes, excuse me, are helping fund that stuff, right?
Right.
The other thing is regulations. You also have the flip side of that, where like, hey, listen, this is a vacation destination. Right. And like, I think of an area that one of my very first short-term rentals is at, is in Bear Lake, Utah. And it's a backyard resort community, northern Utah, lake community. And it was primarily a second home market anyways. It was a vacation home market. Not a lot of people are living up there. People go up there in the summertime specifically. Like, I mean, there you can snowmobile in the wintertime, but it's like a summertime market. And as short-term rentals started to increase and as the popularity of it started to increase, this area got, you know, it blew up. There's cabins everywhere. And they're saying, hey, listen, we gotta slow this down. So you're like, well, why would they? It's a vacation market.
Right.
The restaurants rely on these visitors. It's a huge part of their tax revenue and their tax base. The issue is the infrastructure that is currently there can't handle any more visitors. Like, it can't handle. Moab was a similar situation. They're like, hey, listen, we can't handle the people that are already coming down here as far as our public infrastructure is concerned. And so they have to regulate. And so there is some smart regulation saying, hey, listen, this is too big of a drain on the system. This is too big of a, you know, this is too big, too many people coming in and using all the resources at one time. And so we can't handle it. So you have that part of the regulation side saying, hey, listen, that, and to me, That makes sense. Yeah, it's responsible. Like you go, we've had multiple properties in Bear Lake, Utah. I don't own one anymore because it just got too crowded. You can't even drive up and down Main Street anymore. You can't do this. And that's my opinion. Some people love the crowds. Like Teresa and my father-in-law and my wife, they loved going up there they love the people. They love the hustle and bustle and everything else.
No, I want to get away from stuff.
Right. I wanted to get away. But it was truly an infrastructure problem. Mm. Moab was more of a well-known market that a lot of people have heard about, because of the national park, Arches National Park and that area down there. And all of a sudden they're saying, hey, listen, we don't have the dumps to support this. The sewer systems can't support this. We don't have the roads can't handle all this stuff. So there's an infrastructure problem.
Yeah.
Then you have the regulation side where the local residents throw a fit and say, hey, listen, I don't want this. I don't want short-term rentals. We bought this as a vacation home where we live here. We don't want it to turn into all these people coming in. They don't care about our parks. They don't care about our stuff. They come in and they use it and they leave. And so the taxes are there to make sure that those things stay nice, that you can invest in that kind of stuff. Yeah. And so the wear and tear is taken care of, but also, the regulations are separate from that, saying, okay, listen, because of the regulations come from all different sources. Maybe it's the local community that doesn't want short-term rentals. Well, they just don't want the wear and tear on all their stuff. They don't want, when I go to Bear Lake, I didn't like all the people. Some people, some local residents, that's how they feel. Other parts of regulations come because the infrastructure can't handle it, right? Mm. But when you talk to business owners or you talk the amount of money being spent on these communities and the taxes, but also the amount of money that the consumer is spending in these markets, it boosts that economy, the local economy for a lot of these local restaurants. And, there's people who host experiences and different things that they're doing in those areas that if without the influx of travelers, those businesses falter. So there's a benefit to a lot of these communities. And sometimes as an investor, we talk all about the benefit, but there's also a drawback because you're saying, hey, listen, is all the hospitality tax we're bringing in, that those massive dollar amounts you mentioned at the beginning of this, is that actually keeping up all of our stuff? Right. Are we reinvesting to handle this influx of buyers? Now, that's a whole different debate, and I think that you and I both agree we're not so sure that any government entity spends money correctly.
Right.
And so I think that that's the other argument.
Right. I want to use this kind of point to maybe transition into our next one about how we've kind of seen a little bit of travel change, at least what this article is saying from Coastal, because when you look at this Airbnb, this is the same article, you scroll down and you can see where the amount of taxes are coming from. You see something like Florida, $439.1 million in taxes collected. But then you look at somewhere like, Tennessee, 156. Utah is only 57. So would this be a good indicator of seeing where a lot of money is being spent? Or is this just an indicator of no, these people just charge a crap ton on taxes? Does that make sense? Could you look at this and be like, oh, I probably shouldn't go to Ohio because there's only 5.8 being spent.
Yeah, I think that this map that you're showing right now, to me, would be more of an indicator of the higher demand markets where the consumer's spending money. Okay. Now, tax rates do change across the board and across different areas. And so you will have higher taxes collected in certain areas more than other areas. And so that is true that you can see that. But I think what we're looking at is an overall hospitality dollar amount tax collected. That's a pretty good indicator of the higher demand.
Okay.
Where are the consumers are spending money.
Okay. Let's go into this next point here. This article is saying that there's some kind of travel change happening here in 2026. I want to get your opinion on it. Mm-hmm. This was an article written by AirDNA, and they're kind of just giving us the revamp on it, but it's saying Jackson Hole, Wyoming has the highest booked occupancy rate between June and August 2026 at 45.5%. This is June and August. That's crazy. But then we go down, we see Cape Cod, Door County, what is that?
Wisconsin.
Outer Banks, North Carolina. Maine Beaches, Newport, Rhode Island. We have Arkansas? We have
Alaska, Kenai Peninsula.
Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
But you have... Do you see
so what things? Are they saying is a trend away from the beach markets?
The beach markets. Yeah. I mean, I'm not seeing a single Panama City. I'm not seeing any of that kind of Gulf Shores, Alabama. So I'm like, whoa, Jackson Hole, Wyoming. This seems like a different change. I want to kind of pick your brain on why you think this is happening, and we can kind of go into maybe, you know,
One, that article, first of all, the source you mentioned, it was AirDNA, it's realtor.com. So it's very interesting, right? The real estate market, we talked about the real estate market last week and how depressed the actual market is for buyers, right? So this is an article trying to say, hey, listen, here's some good markets that you might consider buying properties in that are, you know, and this might be a good return based on the occupancy rates. Those are all, every single one of those that you mentioned is still all very top vacation markets, right?
Right.
You know, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, you've got Yellowstone National Park, the Teton National Park. You've got as many outdoor activities as you want, fly fishing, right? I said to
beautiful.
We were watching another one of Taylor Sheridan's shows, The Madison. And so we just started, and I told Teresa before we started, I said, and we live out in the Western Mountains in Utah. I said, Taylor Sheridan should have a real estate brokerage for all of these Western mountain towns that he's putting in these shows, because it's got to be just a boom of popularity. And so some of that, I think, is what's trending as far as pop culture, right? People are like the fantasy of going out west and hanging out in the mountains. Doesn't surprise me with Jackson. Jackson is not a, even though that show's right there, they're kind of portraying it as a really good vacation market because visitors want to go there. The cost to play in that game, remember we talked about last week, the acquisition cost to get into a market versus the revenue you're going to generate, that ratio has to be favorable for you. The ratio on the acquisition side, the revenue's there on the back end, but it's not a good ratio of revenue for how much those properties are costing you to buy, right? So, but if we go there just from a revenue or just from a demand perspective, which is what the point of your argument is, or the topic is saying, hey, listen, are the buyers shifting where they want to go?
Yeah, maybe a little bit,
right? Saying, hey, listen, even the coastal markets are a little bit more of the colder coastal markets,
Cape Cod,
Door County, Outer Banks, like they're not your the main beaches, Newport, Rhode Island, like so you got a lot of the Northeast and then out west, Alaska, the Michigan West Coastal, so you got a lot of the Great Lakes markets. And
that seems interesting to me.
So it's and maybe it's just, you know, again, I always kind of go to the source of this. I'd love to see if this is trending on AirDNA, where they really are looking at what are those markets. If you pull up AirDNA, I'm curious, go to their last blog or their last market report. You had it last week. Right here. Go down. It should talk about them. Keep going.
Let's see here.
Keep going. It should show you like mountain, coastal, urban.
See if I can find it here real fast.
Go back to the resources really quick. The resources tab. Right, yep. Go to the resources tab. Guys, we can post all this stuff that we're looking at.
Outlook report.
Top market.
Wow.
It should be in the mark. Okay. Well, anyways, we don't need to pull it up. We don't have it as right at the tip of our fingertips. So people are listening. They don't have to sit and wait for us to find it. The point of it is I like the article. I like the, you know, it's a realtor.com article though. And so realtor.com is trying to show and say, hey, listen, there's still some places you can go buy. There's still some places that you ought to look, right? And so depending on what markets they're trying to push rentals into, you know, or our buyers into, or, you know, that that could be weighted a little bit there. I mean, you know, they're quoting Summit Sotheby's or Sotheby's International when they're talking about Jackson Hole, which is a higher end brokerage, right? You know, and Engel and Volker's are their higher end stuff. And so maybe we're trying to push properties to sell. As far as the consumer is concerned, I mean, those are all still major markets. Have always been, will always be great summertime markets. When you talk about those markets, every one of those markets is also very, very seasonal. You know, when you start talking about the Jersey Shores, and you start talking about all those northeastern markets, the Great Lakes summer markets, very much like, hey, listen, I'm making my money from Memorial Day to Labor Day. So it makes sense that they're the highest occupancy markets for June and July and August, right? So far, it's like saying it's trending that these are booking out because there's, you know, people want to be there in the summertime. They're very, very, very heavily weighted toward you're making your money in the summertime.
Interesting. So
that's another thing. And again, I'm kind of going reading between the lines and diving deep in the weeds of what we're saying.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily buying into that the consumer has changed
like mindset
where they want to go. Yeah, exactly. I think that this is a little bit more of an article that maybe shows that and highlights some of those good markets. And I think that those are all, again, major markets. I'm not saying they're investable markets as a short-term rental.
Right.
Number one market on there, Jackson Hole, Wyoming. One of my favorite places on earth is Jackson Hole. I love Jackson Hole.
Right.
Investable as an STR market is pretty tough because the acquisition cost is so high.
Okay. So if I have a coastal market, you know, Gulf Shores, Alabama,
I'm not worried. Yeah. You're not freaking out right absolutely now. Not.
Okay.
No. Absolutely not.
Okay. That's very interesting. I mean, I think you brought up a really good point with like the pop culture kind of thing. I feel like there has been a new surge kind of to go like touch nature, I think, is something we saw not too long ago on searches, or just kind of be outdoorsy, especially with these like giant mountains. I mean, they have some amazing scenery. And then plus like if I'm correct, Maine, Rhode Island, they have those nice little boats. I've seen tons of pictures of the little boats.
Oh yeah. And the little lakes they've got some amazing. Yeah.
It's a completely different scenery. I think that's very interesting. Let's go into our third topic here. Now, I bring up this point because I see these two Skift articles that came out. I believe it was like the CEO or Chief Business Officer, Dave Stephenson, of Airbnb was talking about these different things they're going to add. And I immediately started thinking about, you know, niching down and being everything to everyone and all this kind of stuff. And so I'm making this point is this the slow bleeding death of Airbnb? Are they trying to accommodate too much? So let's just kind of, I have just a little bit here. David Stephenson, he said during a Skift interview Tuesday that Airbnb has nothing to announce about flights, but know that we're absolutely thinking about how we just make the journey better. They're working on flights before COVID happened, and now they're looking on how to expand to more activities, actions, and things.
Yeah.
Then in another one, Airbnb's latest service expansion, rides from the airport, we're thinking, hold on here. So now they may be adding a pre-booked trip from the airport, like a ride. And now hearing this, do you think it's kind of diluting the platform a little bit? Like someone would go here normally to book a short-term rental, but now you can go here, book a short-term rental. You can get an experience. You can do a service. You could do maybe possibly flights in time. They've talked about expanding to hotels, and now there may be their rides from the airport. Is this going to be, are you trying to be too much?
Well, maybe not. So I think that Airbnb still does. I think they make the main thing the main thing. Keep the main thing the main thing,
which is
short-term rentals, right? And then, but what they've realized, which any business that grows to that size, they start to think, okay, we have this massive customer base and they are doing certain things with us. We built a lot of trust with them. Like they're already here. What else can we sell them? Right. And so what they're doing is layering on services and offerings that would be complementary to their main offer, right? Hey, listen, my main offer are short-term rentals. My main customer base are short-term rental guests that are coming in and visiting these places. Mm-hmm. What else can we sell? Does it make sense to show them, you know, discounted airlines? Does it make sense to show them, you know, rides from the airport, like experiences, which they're doing right now, services and experiences while they're on vacation? I think that, you know, it can become really muddy when you start to, if you start to all of a sudden want to be a rideshare company, or you want to be, hey, the Expedia for airlines, right, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those, if they keep the main thing, and they have this customer base that is dialed in. I mean, marketing 101 is saying, hey, listen, how can I make that customer journey better by offering more services or more products? I can still capitalize on my current customer base with complementary products to our main offer. And I think that that's what they're doing. I don't necessarily think that it's getting watered down too much. I don't see them losing focus necessarily on the main thing, which right now is we are a platform for short-term rental hosts and guests to go find a great stay somewhere.
Right.
Right. And these ancillary services, I feel like it's obvious, at least to me, as a consumer, they are complementary type services. Mm. They're not the main service, right?
Right. Right. I mean, this is really interesting, man. I mean, hey. I want to make a kind of some predictions here, yeah. Or pick your brain on predictions. I'm on Airbnb.com. I mean, look at these things that you can do right here. I mean, you have tons of experiences and services you could go to, but I guess my main question is a prediction. Do you think maybe Airbnb just goes, hey, Waymo, hey, Turo, let's work together here. Let's absorb you, and you'll be the rides from the airport from now on. Or Vrbo, we don't need you anymore. Vrbo just complete. Do you think Vrbo is going to die off from this? What are some predictions you think could happen?
Well,
here?
One, I think that you could acquire some of those smaller companies and say, hey, listen, we're going to layer this onto an offering that we have right now. They're very much a, hey, listen, we rely on our main product. They don't have a product. They have a platform for those of us with the product can go put on there, but they built a customer base that is massive, right? And so they built a very intentional customer base. The most valuable asset in any company is its customer base. Airbnb has built a massive customer base, and we are vendors that want to tap into that customer base. When you go to Airbnb and the user interface on their main page, it still always defaults to homes.
Right.
You can do experiences and services and pull up other stuff, but you're always going to default to homes, right?
Right.
And I think that they're still keeping that the main thing. Now, could they say, hey, listen, when you're going to acquire a business or you're going to invest in a business, one of the hardest things to do is in business is customer acquisition. It's one of your most expensive things is customer acquisition. They're mitigating their risk going into these other verticals. So yeah, is it possible that they go and say, hey, listen, we are going to be the provider now, which that has never really been their business model. Mm. Their business model is to say, hey, listen, we've got this massive buyer pool. And if you want to tap into it, you come in and tap into these buyers that are very loyal to us. They start searching for homes. They're now going to go to these complimentary areas, whether they own those complimentary service areas or offerings or products is probably yet to be seen. That doesn't seem to fit their business model.
Okay.
But if they decided to do it, they've got a massive customer base already built in. It wouldn't be outside of the lines to do it by any stretch because they've already paid a lot of money to acquire all those customers. They built trust with a lot of those customers. Those customers are fairly loyal to go to when they want to go book. Direct bookings are getting harder and harder. Like, we work really hard to build trust because there's a trust recession out there with consumers.
Right.
And so we try to build a lot of trust with consumers that are willing to transact off of those kind of known platforms like an Airbnb or a Vrbo. So they've got a massive advantage on how they built that customer base, but their business model has always been, hey, listen, we've got this big buyer pool. We're going to let you tap into that buyer pool, whether you own homes now, whether they have experiences, whether they have services, maybe it's going to now be airline airlines, let's say I'm a Delta and I'm looking at it saying, hey, and Airbnb is like, hey, listen, we've got these massive amounts of people, millions and millions of people that are traveling every single year. A lot of them are flying too. Would you like to give us some sort of a discount? And then when somebody books on Delta, you know, I don't think they're going to ever become an airline, but their business model isn't that. They go attract the airlines because they've got intentional buyers that are flying places, right? That need to buy airline tickets. Same as us with short-term rentals. So I don't think that they're necessarily going to go buy a Waymo or go buy these companies. Right. I don't think that they're in the kind of the mergers and acquisitions model, right? They're in like the customer acquisition model and building this massive customer base that a lot of us vendors can go in, but their main product has always been homes. And I think as long as they keep that the main focus, it doesn't feel like they get just watered down and then somebody else comes in where that is their main thing, right?
All right, I think I have kind of a stupid question, so just bear with me here, but let me ask it. Would it be smart for somebody who's maybe self-managing to realize, okay, we got experiences, we got services, they're talking about like rides from the airport and like planes. Should I just literally become a full-on travel agent in a way where I build out your itinerary? I don't just sell you my home anymore. I sell you the home, and plus on Tuesdays we do massages, and on Wednesdays we do this, and we can get you, we have the private chauffeur that'll come pick you up. I'll schedule that for you. Yeah. And they're going to start handling all these extra things. Or should you just sell your home?
Yeah, I'm a believer of keep the main thing the main thing.
The main thing.
Most of us are not big enough to try to capitalize on a whole bunch of different verticals.
Mm.
There's, again, like what Airbnb is doing, you don't have to be that massive to be able to capitalize on different verticals. And I think the instinct is to say, okay, I need to sell. If I'm going to do this, then I need to do this, yes, and this and this. And you can become a jack of all trades, mm-hmm, and a master of none.
Mm.
Well, the master makes the most amount of money. And so if you become really, really good at what you're doing and you really mastered being a great host with the greatest properties and the immersive experiences that we're trying to do, that's where we're going to make our money. The other stuff usually is going to be secondary to that. And so, yeah, but I could say, hey, I want to be the best massage parlor in this area. And now, right, I'm going to be that, right? Instead, yeah, or I'm going to be, the best taxi driver whatever, or yeah, Uber driver or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like when you're small, you've got to narrow down the niche. You've got, mm-hmm, to narrow down and say, the main thing is the main thing, and right, I'm going to focus on that. And the other stuff is going to be ancillary that I don't have necessarily the time or the focus for,
mm,
because I need to spend my time and focus maximizing this one thing.
Right. I want to end on this last point, yeah, right here on how important experiences is and the pattern interrupt main image, yeah, right? Because I mean, when we have all these things, yeah, you have so many things you
look
can
go
through.
Look how they just blend in. I mean,
this is my point. Yeah. This is what I want to hit on this. I mean, especially if we're going to start adding experiences, services, all these other things we're talking about, how important it is to stand out in these things. I mean, what's the deal here, man? Be honest with me. How well, do I do it?
Yeah. Well, it's you mentioned it's a pattern interrupt, right? I've got to be different. The best, right, way to do it is to be different. But I can't be different in this for the sake of having being like, think about like when you're scrolling online, and we all know like clickbait is, right? It's right, like, okay, I can't have like clickbait, mm-hmm, when I'm trying to be different. Like clickbait is a way to be kind of shocking, controversial, different,
right,
and kind of stop the scroll that way. I can't do that. I've got to, mm-hmm, still do it in a way that is congruent with what I'm trying to offer and do. Well, what we have is a whole bunch of really, really good homes that we're, right, always competing against. And when you scroll through, even though they're all really, really nice homes, like you're on their popular, the most popular homes that Airbnb has to offer, they just all look very similar.
I mean, that's,
right,
so interesting. That, I mean, just looking at this one bar right here.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had a pattern interrupt, it seems like you would just.
Yeah, it just doesn't exist in our world. This is marketing 101. This is not us making, yeah, this stuff up. We're saying, hey, listen, we're going outside of kind of a mom and pop investor business. And I say, mm-hmm, mom and pop, not because it's not, I mean, we are definitely in the time of the professional host. This is a mainstream asset of the stage. Yeah. You just don't have a lot of institutional investors in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I call it mom and pop. But that being said, a lot of the mom and pop businesses are not, they're focusing on what they think is the business they're in, which is homes. Right. And they try to show homes and they try to show the features of the home and all this different stuff. What we have to do is show the experience. Mm. But before I can even get a chance to show the experience, I've got to have some sort of a pattern interrupt. Think about it with colors. Think about it with being different, right? Mm. And so it's like colors evoke a lot of emotion. Mm-hmm. And so depending on the color, you can get somebody to stop a pattern interrupt, right?
Right.
And I've got to look and say, okay, like we did in our workshop, right? It's, mm-hmm, like, hey, listen, I'm in Florida and Anthony had a home that was all, they had all pools, right?
Right.
So there's just blue, 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 blue. You had some greens with the palm trees, but it's blue and green all up and down that feed.
Right.
Wasn't even showing me the outside of the house. It was just pools, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, what could I do? What's a contrasting color to blue? And we said orange. We said, okay, great. Orange is a great one. Mm-hmm. And he had happened to have this very good sunset scene that,
beautiful,
was in a bedroom.
Yeah.
Totally different than people would think about putting on there. And we put that on there. And it's a massive pattern interrupt when you're scrolling through. But then they stop. They hit on it. And I'm still showing the beautiful pool and everything else. I'm going, right, to show you the entire experience that, right, somebody's going to have. And I have to build out that experience and I have to articulate it really well. But it starts with stopping the scroll. And stopping, yeah, the scroll nowadays is really hard. And the way you do it is something has to be feel like it doesn't fit there, right?
Interesting.
But it's even harder when you're not trying to do it in a clickbaity way or, right, something that like we can all go throw something that doesn't belong. It's like, you know, all these things belong. What doesn't belong? There's like a kid song that says that or something.
I know. I see that doesn't just fit right. It doesn't go with your.
You can't just put something in there with zero intention. Right. Right. And so, but we design specifically around that. So it starts with how we're setting up this design, knowing that we have to do that. Mm-hmm. And so whatever I put there is going to be very applicable to the overall story and experience.
Mm. Man, where can we point these people? Do you got a webinar?
Let's go to the webinar. We've got our Tuesday, Thursday webinar. Tuesdays at noon, Thursdays at 6.
Huge.
And so you can get on, whether you can't get on it during the day on Tuesday, get on at night on Thursday. Go register for that. We'll put that in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And we walk through the three phases and what the mistakes that people make in the phase is, but how you can solve that mistake and how you can overcome that.
Mm, I love it. We're at 40 minutes. We did it all. We did it all. And that's it. We're wrapping now.
Well, let's wrap it up. So guys, we appreciate you spending your time with us. As always, we know it's valuable. And if you spend it with us, we know and appreciate that very, very much. We know that that is, you know, that means a lot to us. I mentioned at the very start of this, 58% of you that listen to this on a regular basis, don't subscribe. Please subscribe. Is it going up at all? We started announcing this a couple weeks ago, barely seeing it.
Barely. We're getting a lot of viewership from Canada, Saudi Arabia, and Australia, though. That was insane. That was really cool to look at.
Nice.
We're growing in those
other areas.
We are. So, hey, I appreciate you for sharing the show to even people in different countries. Thank you for that.
Love it. Yeah. So those, if you do follow it and, you know, if you have somebody that you know that you can share it to, absolutely share it. Those things help us grow more than anything else. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have anybody specifically to share it with, if you follow that algorithm, we'll put it in front of other people like you. So those things are very appreciated from our side. And the final most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.